Greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is an educational service in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 75 countries worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. And the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on heaven. Is it the reward of the saved? When we come back. You know, Charles Lyell was one of the pillars of modern geology. He published his Principles of Geology back in the early 1800s. It's Lyell's concepts that are so widely accepted and adopted today, so that most people who believe these doctrines don't even know who it was that originated those. It's from Lyell's system of reasoning, though, that a doctrine of origins was devised by simply projecting all of the natural processes that we observe today back through time indefinitely. That way, catastrophes like Noah's flood are strictly ruled out. This is called science. Well, listen to this. Here's some science for you. The sun is shrinking. That was a Newswire report made that surprising statement. The sun is shrinking. Well, it's true. The sun's diameter appears to have been decreasing by about 0.1% per century. We observe that scientifically. Scientists have been watching for over 100 years now, and the evidence is now in, and it's conclusive. Every hour, the sun is shrinking by about 5 feet. Now, if the sun is shrinking 0.1% per century, then it totals 1% per millennium, every 1,000 years, 1%. Now, if the sun existed just 100,000 years ago, it would have been double its present diameter. And just looking back 20 million years ago, the surface of the sun would be touching the Earth. And as far as researchers can tell, this rate of shrinkage has been consistent since the origin of the sun. That's uniformitarianism at work. Now, what did our teachers tell us about the dinosaurs' extinction? Do you remember that? Well, they told us that that was 65 million years ago. So 65 million years ago, the dinosaurs became extinct. But only 20 million years ago, the surface of the sun was 93 million miles in diameter, and it would touch the Earth. Now, you know, you don't have to be a rocket scientist to do the math on this kind of pseudo-scientific lie. And that's just one more of the many examples of evolutionary propaganda that masquerades under the guise of science. And that's just one more of the many lessons in my Mosaic Law School. I conduct that here in Isabella, Missouri, twice a year. Now, if you'd like more information, why don't you call and order my free General Law CD package? That's a 4-hour commentary on the law in general. It's educational, it's informative, it's entertaining. Best of all, it's free of charge, and you can call and order yours right now. The number to call, 417-273-4967. Remember, the Mosaic Law School is also on compact disc for adult home study. If you're online, you can go to the website, georgegordon.org. Just click onto the email machine and then send an email request for your free General Law CD package. Remember, that's georgegordon.org. Do it right now before you forget. That's georgegordon.org, or call direct, 417-273-4967. Well, here at the law school, we get a number of questions from time to time from listeners, and they'll write in and they'll ask questions. I don't answer every question every time directly over the air, but once in a while, one of them comes up, like this heaven. I got a request here not too long ago from someone, a listener, who said that he wanted to know where in the Bible it says that when you die, you go to heaven. Where in the Bible does it say, when you die, you go to heaven? Well, it just so happens that in the Mosaic Law School, which is three binders of about 500 pages each, in volume 3, chapter 39, There's a doctrinal treatise called Heaven, Is It the Reward of the Saved? So we'll turn to that chapter, and let's take a look at this concept of heaven, because I know that I have relatives that believe in this thing called heaven, like my grandmother when she died back in 1970. At the funeral, Mrs. Birchfield said that my grandmother was looking down and smiling upon me from heaven. That was my grandmother's good friend, Mrs. Birchfield. And I'm sure that Mrs. Birchfield was very sincere in her belief that my grandmother, that just minutes before, in the funeral home, we had all filed by the casket. And if you've ever been to a funeral, and you know the custom that we follow, we get up and we all file by the casket to view the remains. Now, when you die, your body doesn't go to heaven. We can all see that because your body is laying there in the casket in Anchor Funeral Home, you know. And you can look right there and you can see my granny or Aunt Bessie or Uncle Otto or some friend of yours laying there in the casket. So where does this concept or this idea that the real granny went to heaven but her body is being buried in the ground, where did that idea come from? Well, it's a pretty old idea, because when we look at mythology, you go back into ancient history and mythology, you find that the Romans, back in Roman times, believed that people went to heaven. And then you can go back further than that to the Greek times, B.C., you know, with Alexander the Great, and he believed that people, when they die, go to heaven. So the Greeks believed it. The Egyptians believed it. In fact, when you dig up these Egyptian temples and underground mausoleums, and you get into those pyramids and you find these remains like King Tut's tomb, you'll find that they made elaborate preparations for the afterlife. People actually believed that when they died, they went to this afterlife, and whether you call it heaven or hell, or you call it nirvana, or, you know, whatever name or label you want to hang on this, it's usually a utopian place. It's not just an ordinary, run-of-the-mill good place like Willits, California, you know. It's a super spot. In fact, the Muslims, to this day, now there's about 6 billion people in the world, and about a billion of them, a little over, 1.3 billion, they tell me, are Muslims, and those Muslims believe that they're going to go to heaven. In fact, the Muslim terrorists are so excited about going to heaven, a whole lot more excited than Christians. They strap explosives on themselves, and they walk into Jewish settlements and explode themselves and kill themselves and a bunch of other people with them. I guess they want to take a bunch of Jews to heaven with them. Never could quite figure that out. If I was on my way to heaven, I think I'd kind of want to go by myself. I wouldn't want to take a bunch of my enemies with me. So the Muslims, they strap on the explosives and they walk in, they kill a bunch of people, and because they really believe that they're going to go to heaven. And when they get to heaven, they're going to have 70 virgins. I don't know if it's 70 virgins or 700 or whatever it is. But they're going to have a bunch of virgins. Well, now, a virgin's only a virgin once, you know, and after you've had sex with this virgin once, she's no longer a virgin. So after you've done it with these 70 virgins once, well, then they're no longer virgins. So you're not going to have 70 virgins for eternity. You're just going to have 70 virgins until you get around all 70 of them. And then once you bred them, well, that's the end of it. I don't know if they thought of that. And I don't know what the big deal over virgins is anyway. But it's a part of their religious ideology. And religion doesn't make a lot of sense. You ever notice that? Religion is really irrational. At least all the religions that I've looked at are pretty irrational. Illogical. They don't seem to make any scientific sense. And they actually don't meet up or match what we would normally call reason, logic, or common sense. Reason, logic, and common sense. But everybody's religious. Even the evolutionists are religious. Evolutionists believe that life came from nothing, that the universe came from nothing. Now, come on, guys. You know, mass and matter are real tangible thingies out there that we can actually weigh, hear, taste, touch, smell. You know, we can apply our senses to these things that we call matter, and we can see that it's real stuff. To say that came from nothing, stretching it a little bit, wouldn't you say? And then we've got various laws, like the laws of thermodynamics, that tell us, you know, by observation and by measurement and science, that we can say that there's been no past eternity of matter. But all of these evolutionists believe in the past eternity of matter. Matter has always existed. Where did matter come from? Came from nothing, they tell us now. Matter comes from nothing and it's always existed. Now that's religion, carried to its extreme. And religious people, whether they go to church and they call themselves Muslims or Catholics or Protestants or Jews or Confucianists, you know, or Shintoists or Taoists, you know, I'm not picking on anybody's religion, I'm just telling you that you look at them, they don't meet the tests of science, they don't meet the tests of reason, logic, or common sense, and that includes evolution. And evolutionary philosophy is just exactly that. It's a religion. It's a belief system in something that's totally irrational and impossible to weigh, measure, taste, touch, feel, and smell. So when I come on the air and I say, well, let's take a look at this concept of heaven. Is it the reward of the saved? And I've got more than one letter along this line, but I got this letter that says, can you show me in the Bible where it says, when you die, you go to heaven? And the answer to you, Roger, is no. No, I cannot show you in the Bible where it says, when you die, you go to heaven. And the reason that I cannot show you that is because it isn't there. Well, it's not in the Hebrew Bible. Now, I can't speak for the Quran or the Book of Mormon or the many hundreds and maybe thousands of religious books that have been written by priests and prophets and all kinds of religious people and scientific people. I can't answer for all of those. But I can tell you, after having researched it exhaustively, that when you look into the Bible, the Hebrew Scriptures, the books of Moses, you know, the books that were written by the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, as distinguished from these other gods out here, of which, you know, there are more gods out here than I can count, more gods out here than I can name. And, of course, with 6 billion people in the world, there's all of these gods out here that they worship, and they say that this is the only true God. You know, to a Muslim, Allah is the only true God. And to a Jew, he's got his only true God, which is something different than the Christians, who have their God. And it's the only true God, unless you're a Baptist, of course, and then he doesn't agree with you Methodists and Catholics and all the rest of you people out here calling yourselves Christians, that his God is the same as your God. And then you've got the ecumenical people over here. They believe any God is God. If you believe in God, God is God is God is God is God. And it doesn't make any difference who you believe in. So I just wanted to identify the subject matter that I'm going to address, and it's from the Hebrew Scriptures, and I went to the King James Translation. I always figured if the King James Translation was good enough for Moses, it must be good enough for me. And I say that with a little tongue-in-cheek. Some of you people out there might actually believe that Moses was reading or writing in the King James, which, of course, he didn't do. But in the original Hebrew Scriptures that we can actually delineate to this day, the word heaven appears in the Bible 570 times. I went out and counted them all. Counted them 570 times. So it's a pretty common word in the Bible, this word heaven. And when you chase it out in Strong's Concordance, you'll find that there's three English words, or three Hebrew words. I guess I should word it that way. There's actually three Hebrew words that were all translated into the one English word heaven. Heaven actually has three different meanings. So if you've got a pen and paper and you want to write this down, you're keeping track. Why? Heaven number one, mentioned in the Bible, which is commonly referred to as heaven, the heaven that Elijah went up into, is called the atmosphere. The atmosphere is heaven. Now, the atmosphere is about 100,000 feet above the ground level on planet Earth. And it contains birds, and what we call air, oxygen, and nitrogen, you know, the atmosphere. It contains clouds. It's mass and matter. It has weight. It occupies space. You can weigh it, taste it, touch it, smell it, feel it, wallow in it. It's real. It exists. Now, of course, we live in it, and we can look right through it, but you can see birds flying in it, and you can see clouds winding their way through it. And we know that when we go up in a spaceship, a rocket ship, you know, the Discovery or something, we go up through it, and when we get past that, we get out into what we call space. Now, space is another place mentioned in the Bible, and it was translated into the English word heaven, where the stars exist. Now, in the first heaven that I just described to you, there are no stars. Now, occasionally a meteorite comes through and blazes like a star. But the Bible talks about a place where our sun and moon exist and where the stars exist. Now, you go out there on a clear night and you look up into the heavens. I don't know why we call it the heavens plural, but we do. Now, it's true, there are three heavens mentioned in the Bible, and I guess the word heavens is probably correct, but you're actually looking at one great big expanse of space out there, and it's a big, big piece of real estate. Now, when the turn of the century came along, a guy by the name of Edwin Hubble came along the scene, and he discovered that there's more galaxies out there than the Milky Way. Up until about Hubble's time, we could only see out into and look into the Milky Way galaxy, which is just one galaxy. They tell us of billions. In fact, the other day, Kent Hovind said that there were, it's estimated now, 2 trillion galaxies like the Milky Way. 2 trillion. Now listen, a trillion is 1,000 billion, and there's only 6 billion people in the world. Now, you know, if you took 6 and divided that into 2,000, let's just do that, 2,000 divided by 6, that's 333 galaxies like the Milky Way for every man, woman, and child on planet Earth today. And that's just as far out there as we can see, which is about 12.5 billion light years. Now, let me describe this light year for you. This heaven out there, spoken of in the Bible, where the stars exist, you know, the stars like our sun and Alpha Centauri and all of these specks that you see out there, those are stars. You can't see the planets because they're overshadowed by the star, like our star, the sun. You know, if you were out there 12 billion light years looking in this direction, you could see our star but not planet Earth, because planet Earth is eclipsed by the brightness of the star, the sun. So we presume that every one of those stars out there probably has 9, 10, 11, 12 planets circling it like our sun does. So that puts a lot of real estate up there. 12.5 billion light years from here out to there is a fur piece, as they say down here in the south. You know, that's a fur piece, and that's a lot of real estate. That's bigger than the whole state of Texas. That's for you Texans down there. That's more real estate than all you people down there in Texas have. Now, to give you an idea how big this piece of real estate or space is from here to there, if you could travel at the speed of light, and they tell us that's 186,200 miles a second, that's a long ways. If you could travel at the speed of light, it would take you more than 1 second, about 1.5 seconds, to get from here to the moon. And if you could travel 186,000 miles a second from here to the sun, take you about 8 minutes. So it's an 8-minute ride at the speed of light to get from here to our sun, which is only 93 million miles away. I say only 93 million. And the spaceship Discovery travels at about 25,000 miles an hour. I mean, if you were trying to get from here out there 12.5 billion light years at 25,000 miles an hour, I mean, you're talking about many, 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 many years to get from here to there. So obviously, even at the speed of light, 12.5 billion light years away. Now, they tell us that the Big Bang occurred about 4 billion years ago. Well, they keep adding to it. It was about a billion years when I was a kid, and then they doubled it to 2 billion, 4 billion. And now I hear talk in National Geographic that they want to expand that out to about 16 billion light years. Because, see, if you can look out there 12.5 billion light years with the Hubble telescope, and assuming the Big Bang occurred and the universe is expanding, getting bigger and bigger, well, then, obviously, it must have occurred before 12.5 billion years ago. That's assuming that the Big Bang theory has any merit, which I don't think it does. But, you know, there are many people out there with that religious ideology and philosophy called evolution that believe that. I don't happen to be one of them, but I don't want to knock their religion. I mean, after all, evolutionists have to have something to believe in. But to get the idea here, the Hubble telescope, you know, was just put up here about 10 years ago, and they got a new one they're going to replace it with, and they tell us it's going to be able to look out 25 billion light years. That's twice as far. Okay. Well, I'm going to test my powers as a prophet, and I'm going to predict that when the new telescope goes up and they look out 25 billion light years, that the distance between what they can see now and what they're going to see with that new telescope is going to be more of the same. So I think that from here out to about 25 billion light years, you're going to see more of the same. A lot more galaxies. Instead of 333 galaxies for every man, woman, and child on the planet, probably be more like 666, you know, give or take a couple. Now, that's a bunch of real estate, because just the Milky Way galaxy, if you know, think about it a little bit, they tell us that it's 100 million miles across. God, these numbers get to be staggering, don't they? 100 million miles across. Well, at 186,000 miles a second to travel 100 million miles. You know, it'd take you about 5 seconds to go a million, so it's going to take you 5 times 100, about 500 seconds, you know, at the speed of light to go across this one. It's just us at 500. And then let's divide that by 100 and 500, it's 100. See, I've only got a Texas Instrument calculator here. It won't go into the billions. So I got to do a little math here. It'd be 100,000. Let's divide that by how many seconds? 186,000 miles a second. So if we could go 100,000 divided by 186, see if that comes out to about 537 seconds divided by 60, would give us about 9 minutes. It takes 9 minutes at the speed of light to go across the Milky Way galaxy. And they tell us it has about 100 million stars, 100 million stars in that one galaxy. Jesus, that's big, isn't it? I mean, and that's just one crummy galaxy, of which they tell us now there's 2 trillion of them out there. All right. Now, the reason I'm telling you a little about this is to give you a little bit of size and scope on this thing called heaven, because people believe they're going to go to heaven. That's a big piece of real estate out there. Where are you going in that big piece of real estate? I mean, are you going left or right, up or down, and are you going out to the Milky Way galaxy or one of these other 2 trillion galaxies, and what are you going to do when you get there? Now, the common ideology that I see in cartoons is that here's an angel, see, and this angel, we'll call him St. Peter, I guess, he's up here at the pearly gates, and when you die, you show up at the pearly gates, and he either lets you in or he throws you down into hell. And this is the common Christian ideology, and it's manifested in things like funerals. As I told you, you know, one lady came up to me, Mrs. Birchfield, and said, your grandmother is looking down from heaven and smiling on you right now. I guess she was trying to make me feel bad because I was crying that day. My grandmother was very near and dear to me, and I was very sad, you know, when she died, and I was very sad when my granddad died, and very sad when my dad died, and, you know, every time I see somebody die and I go to a funeral, it makes me sad. I guess that's why we wear black. You know? Death is kind of final. My grandmother died in 1970, and I haven't had a conversation with her from that day to this. Now, that's 35 years. I haven't been able to talk to my granny. And so we like to think that when we die, we're going to go to where Granny is, and Aunt Bessie and Uncle Otto and Uncle Buster and Aunt Edith, and we're going to go off out to heaven someplace. And so I'm just going to raise the subject matter, well, what if Uncle Buster is traveling out there, you know, 2 trillion miles to the left, and you're going out here 2 trillion miles to the right? I mean, you know, you could miss each other out there in a big piece of real estate like that, couldn't you? I don't know if anybody else ever thinks like this, you know, but I listen to these people and their ideas and their ideologies, and I get to musing it, you know, buzzing it back and forth between my ear bowls, and I say to myself, God, how's that going to work? And then this guy writes me a letter and says, well, where does it say in the Bible that you're going to go to heaven when you die? I looked up all 570 references. I couldn't find it. I couldn't find a place in the Hebrew Scriptures. Now, I'm sure in the Koran and five other religious books you could probably find them, but not here in the Bible. Not here in the Bible. It talks about resurrection. That's mentioned over here 135 times. But you can't find anybody going to heaven. Now, I said there's 3 places that heaven is mentioned. Now, this big piece of real estate, I mean the great big piece of real estate from here out as far as you can see with the Hubble telescope, a fur piece, big piece of real estate, is called the second heaven in the Bible. It's where the stars are located. There's a third heaven mentioned in the Bible. This third heaven is where God lives. It's where Jesus said to these ladies on Sunday morning, he said, don't touch me, because I have not yet ascended to the Father. Now, the Bible talks about the Father, God, the Creator, the one who's greater than the Son, Jesus, who came to planet Earth, lives out in heaven. Now, does he live out around Alpha Centauri? Does he live out around Orion or some other nebula or out in a black hole or someplace out in space? No. The Bible's pretty specific about that. I'll show you some of these scriptural references as we get to it. But when you get out here, past the stars, as far out as you could get, 25 billion light years, 50 billion light years, 100 billion light years, a trillion light years. I don't know how far out it is. But somewhere out there, there's a line, and on the other side of the stars, where there's no stars, where the stars end, and there's a place out there where they end, is called the third heaven in Scripture, and that's where God lives. He lives out in the third heaven. And the Scripture talks about it as being in the north. Well, the only place that we can figure north and south is right here on planet Earth. So if you take a look here on planet Earth, and you look north, there's a big hole, where there's no stars. Nobody can quite figure out why there's a big hole there with no stars, but there is. And the Scripture mentions that, or at least it references that, and says that God's throne is in the north. I'll show you that as we progress along here. So, you go through that hole, that black hole out there, and Jesus evidently must have been beamed up. Because, you know, we talk about the spaceship Discovery, you know, these shuttle spaceships, you know. And they travel 25,000 miles an hour, and Apollo, you know, went out to the moon at 25,000 miles an hour. I mean, that's not very fast. Because you got to get that up to 186,000 miles a second to get up to warp speed. Whatever warp speed is. And Jesus went out to the third heaven, which is farther than 25 billion light years. At least it's sure as hell a lot further than 12.5 billion light years. And came back, and he did it in one day, because the next day he goes through a wall. Spirit beings do that. You know, he went through a wall into a closed locked room with the 12 disciples and said, well, hi, fellas, how's things? How's tricks? And they were all shocked. They said, how did you get in here? And then there was a guy by the name of Thomas. Remember that guy? He said, Doubting Thomas. And he said, well, prove to me that you're really Jesus. And he said, well, stick your fingers right here into my holes in my hands. Now, this is the same guy that the day before, you know, had been resurrected from the dead, or a week before, or whatever it was. But he went out to the third heaven and came back. Now, he traveled faster than 186,000 miles a second. I know that because it didn't take him 12.5 billion years to get out there, and then 12.5 billion years to get back, which is what Hubble telescope tells us he would have had to have done at the speed of light. So he had to get out there something faster than the speed of light. So these spirit beings that we call God, angels, or whatever, you know, they travel faster than the speed of light. So they can be beamed up to heaven, and they can be beamed back down. And if you're a Mormon, you believe that. You believe that those good Mormons, all the good people on planet Earth, were at one time spirit beings, and they were out in heaven, and they've been sent down here to Earth, and then if they qualify, they can go back to heaven. Now, I never could quite figure out the logic behind that. Because if they were already in heaven, they must have already been perfect spirit beings living their lives and doing their thing. And I can't figure any logic in taking these perfect spirit beings living in heaven and sending them down here to planet Earth, which is something less than perfect, filled with all kinds of sin and wickedness and evil, and many more people who are pagans and heathens and not Mormons, and only Mormons can get back to heaven. So you're sending 6 billion people down here from heaven, and then only 13 million of them can get back. That sounds like to me that you've got something to lose and nothing to gain. I can't see any logic in that. But then I can't see any logic in religion anyway. But that's what I was told by some Mormons one time, knocking on my door. Came in, and I said, well, where'd you come from? And they said, well, we came from this place out in heaven, and we're down here on planet Earth trying to qualify to get back. You know, it's like getting out of the United States, and then you got to work real hard to get back in. Seems like to me you'd want to leave with a passport. Well, listen, it's halfway time here, and I've got to give you a reminder. You're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Law School and The Law Hour, that's the Gordon Law School and The Law Hour, please go to the website georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Remember, the law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. Remember, the law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals by prearrangement. The law school offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. To order yours, just call the law school at 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc, and the Law Hour website is updated weekly. It has our radio log schedule and archive, and it can be accessed through the website at georgegordon.org. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest, and the Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, economics, education, politics, religion, news, and current events 7 days a week. Oh, gosh, I've got to give you one more reminder here. Can't pick it up here. So remember this, that the opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone. They do not necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of the advertisers, or the sponsors, or management, or staff of the network, or the local radio station. For more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, remember the website georgegordon.org, or call the law school direct at 417-273-4967. We have to give you that reminder every day so that you don't think that the advertisers and sponsors and radio station personnel are as crazy and off the wall as I am. So we got to remind you that these news and views are mine and mine alone. All right, we're talking about heaven. Is it the reward of the saved? Got a letter in here. It isn't just one. I get several, and then after I get several, I say, well, gosh, maybe it's a subject of general interest out there, so we'll cover that. It happens to be chapter 39 in the Mosaic Law School. That's that Mosaic Law School, in case you were wondering. He keeps talking about this Mosaic Law School. It's on compact disc. I've forgotten how many now, but these compact discs are about 75 minutes each, and there's probably, oh, I'm going to guess 40 or 50, maybe even 60. I kind of forget, of these compact discs that cover the entire 133 titles of law, all 759 statutes, judgments, and commandments, all 24 penalties, all 24 death penalties, all 26 penalties in the scripture, but there's 24 of them that are death penalties. Now, there's 26 ways to punish people. One of them is the death penalty, and out of 133 crimes, or 133 laws, 24 out of 133 are punishable by death. Covers all of those. Shows you right here in the Bible. Chapter and verse. You want to know what the penalty for adultery is? I can give you the chapter and verse. I can show you every law in the Bible concerning adultery and show you what the penalty is for it and who said so and how it's carried out. Whether you're going to stone the guy, hang the guy, or burn the guy. So that's what you get in the Mosaic Law. But in addition to that, there's 90 common doctrines, of which heaven and hell are what we call common doctrines. Rapture, that's a common doctrine. You know, a lot of religious people believe in the rapture, or the immortality of the soul, or that they're going to go to heaven when they die, and so on. So chapter 39 deals with this very subject. Heaven, is it the reward of the saved? So if you're a good guy, you're a good Mormon, you came down here from heaven, you did all the right things, you know, you got all the I's dotted and the T's crossed, you get to go back to heaven where you came from, back to the same estate that you were before you got here. And then, of course, non-Mormons like me, we're failures in life. We came down from heaven, according to this belief. We came down from heaven, but we didn't qualify because we didn't become Mormons while we were here. And because we're Catholic, Protestant, or Jew, we're going into that other place, hell. So we had perfection in heaven, and we ended up going to hell because we didn't join the right church, the right corporate organization. But the Mormons aren't alone in that belief. The Catholics have the same belief. I remember as a child, young fellow, 12 years old, 13, we were rolling papers at the Eureka Theater in Eureka, California, when I worked for the Humboldt Times. And about five or six of us kids sitting there on the concrete rolling our papers, getting ready to go deliver the Humboldt Times in the morning, you know. And I don't know who brought up the conversation, but, you know, let's say it was David Wagner. And he said, hey, listen, I went to catechism the other day, and the preacher says that if you're not a, let's see, now David was a Nazarene. He said, if you're not a Nazarene, you're going to go to hell. And Ed O'Neill was there, and Eddie said, well, I'm a Catholic, and they teach us in the Catholic Church that if you're not a Catholic, you're going to go to hell. Mike Lyons was there, and said, well, Mike, he said, well, I'm a Baptist, and they tell us in Baptist church and Sunday school that if you're not a Baptist, you're going to go to hell. Well, I'm sitting there, and I said, well, hell, I'm a Lutheran, and I go to the Lutheran day school. And Pastor Kohler told us that if you're not a Lutheran, in fact, it's even with Lutherans, it gets really tricky. You see, there's a bunch of different brands of Lutherans out there. You can be a Lutheran from the Missouri Synod. That was our corporate charter. Or you could be a Lutheran from the Swedish group, or a Lutheran from the Danish group, or something like that. And you had to be of the Missouri Synod. I mean, you had to have the right corporate charter, or you were going to go to hell. So not all Lutherans are going to go to heaven. Just the Missouri Synod Lutherans are going to heaven. And that's more stringent than the Mormons and most anybody else. And so we were all mulling that over a little bit, and it became pretty obvious to us at age 12 or 13 years old, you know, just kids, that we all couldn't be right, that most of us were going to go to hell. Most of us were on our way to hell. And our real trick was, well, how can we tell whether or not we should go over to Mike Lyons' church or over to David Wagner's church or Eddie O'Neill's church or Georgie Gordon's church? See, we didn't know. We're just little kids. And we're all being brainwashed by parents who insist that we go to these specific churches. And I'm not sure that these parents have thought this through very well. Because if my parents were right, then all the rest of these parents were wrong, and they're all going to hell with their kids because we belong to the right church, the Missouri Synod of the Lutheran Church, and we're all going to heaven, all the rest of you poor dopes out there are going to hell. And that leaves out all you Muslims over there that aren't even in the game. Now, what do you think of that? And, of course, you got the evolutionists out here. They don't believe in going to heaven. They believe that when you die, it's all over. You just go into a hole in the ground. That's it. You're just a cosmic accident anyway. You weren't designed by anybody, and there's no afterlife. They don't even have the same beliefs as the pagans from Assyria, Babylon, and Egypt, that there was an afterlife and you ought to prepare for it. See? So there you are. Now, that kind of gives you a thumbnail sketch of all these various and sundry religious ideologies. So I guess it's time for us to take a look here in the Bible itself. And let's take a look at a few of these ideas. Where do these ideas come from? Well, people that are religious say that they get these ideas, that they cite scriptures out of the Bible to support their belief that they're going to go to heaven. And the first place that they turn is Genesis 5, verses 21 through 24. So if you've got a Bible, why don't you whip it out and turn to Genesis. That's the first book in the Bible, chapter 5. And verse 21, it says, "And Enoch lived 65 years and begat Methuselah." That's interesting. Methuselah lived to be 969 years old. Methuselah's daddy was Enoch, who lived 65 years. So he was 65 years old, and I guess he had a wife, and they got together and begat a child named Methuselah, who died the year of the flood. So Methuselah was not too righteous of a guy. Otherwise, he should have been in the ark. Well, anyway, Enoch walked with God after he begat Methuselah 300 years and begat sons and daughters. So Enoch lived for 300 more years. I guess he lived for a total of 365 years. And it says he begat sons and daughters, plural, after he begat Methuselah. So that would be at least two more boys and two more girls, plural. So he must have had a minimum of 5 children. Well, in 300 more years, he probably could have had 65 more children, but he had at least 4 more. Verse 23, "And all the days of Enoch were 365 years." So he was a short-lived fellow, you know, for that time and age. When Methuselah, his boy, lived to be 969 years old, and Adam lived to be 930, and a bunch of other guys lived to be 800-900 years old, this guy living 365 years is kind of like my Uncle Carol, who died at age 30. He didn't live a real long time. And verse 24 is the key. It says, "And Enoch walked with God, and he was not, for God took him." Now, what religious people do is they take a look at these four verses and they say, well, the story of Enoch tells us that Enoch went to heaven. Now, I just read to you the four verses from the King James Bible, and it does not say that Enoch went to heaven. It says that Enoch walked with God, and he was not, for God took him. Took him where? Well, the assumption is that he took him to heaven. But it does not say that it took him to heaven. That is an assumption. In law, we call that assuming facts, not an evidence. We would not admit that into evidence in trial. I don't know why we would admit that into evidence in religion, but we do. If you were on trial, and I came in and I made this conclusion, this is a conclusion. It's drawing a conclusion from insufficient facts. We don't have enough facts in these four verses to conclude that Enoch went to heaven, but all religion, as far as I can tell, all religions have assumed that Enoch went to heaven because he walked with God. Well, that is kind of a quandary, that leaves us with kind of a quandary, because it doesn't say here that Enoch was the friend of God, and Moses was. Abraham was the friend of God. And Moses was a friend of God, and David was called a man after God's own heart. Moses, when he died, he was buried by God on, I think it was Mount Moriah. Some mountain over there, I forget, maybe it wasn't Mount Moriah, but some hilltop over there. Remember, Moses was 120 years old, went up on top of the mountain. And God killed him and buried him up there. He said, "I'm going to bury you up here because I don't want any of these people down here picking up your ankle bone or something like that and making a god out of it, or making a shrine out of it, worshiping it." So nobody knows to this day where Moses was buried. Nobody knows where his grave is or whatever happened to him. Now, that's the first place that people come to the conclusion that Well, when you die, you go to heaven. All right, now there's a second one here in 2 Kings 2, verses 9 through 11. Listen to this. It says, it came to pass that when they were gone over, that Elijah said to Elisha. Now, there's two different guys here. One guy is named Elijah, spelled E-L-I-J-A-H. And he said to his buddy, Elisha, E-L-I-S-H-A, ask what I shall do for you before I be taken away from you. And Elisha said, I pray thee, let a double portion of your spirit be upon me. And he said, well, you have asked a hard thing. Nevertheless, if you see me when I am taken from you, it shall be so unto you. But if not, it shall not be so. And so it came to pass, as they still went on and talked, that behold, there appeared a chariot of fire and horses of fire, and parted them both asunder, and Elijah went up by a whirlwind into heaven. Now, you probably heard that old Negro spiritual, you know, that says, you know, swing low, sweet chariot. Now, this was some kind of a miracle. This isn't something that normally happens. These two men are walking down the road, and they're having a little conversation. And Elijah says to Elisha, says, well, I got to go. I'm leaving. The text here doesn't tell us where he's going. I don't know if he's going to Babylon or Egypt or whether he's going down to Kelly's pool hall or what he's going to do, but he tells Elisha that he's going to go. And he says, is there anything I can get you before I split and leave the scene? And Elisha says, yeah, I want a double spirit of your, or a double portion of your spirit. I'd like to have a little wisdom, logic, and reason, and common sense, and I'd kind of like you to, you know, well, Solomon asked God for that. He said, well, give me wisdom. God said, well, that's pretty wise of you, asking for wisdom rather than money. Because with wisdom, you can get a lot of money. And Solomon did. And a lot of girls, too. He had more than 70 virgins. He had 1,000 of them. So, you know, Solomon knew how to live. You know, he could burn the candle at both ends and in the middle at the same time. Well, Elisha wanted to have some of this spirit, and so Elijah said, well, if you see me taken away at the time that this parting of ours occurs, then you're going to get what you want. And sure enough, here's God. He swings down here with this chariot and picks up Elijah and whoops him off up into heaven. Now the question arises, where did he go? Into the first heaven? Up into the clouds? You know, where the 747s and the Aronka Champs and the Stearmans fly? Or did he go out into the second heaven where the stars are located, which is a little tricky in a human's physical body because there's no oxygen out there to breathe, so you don't want to get up there too high. Or out to the third heaven, did he go out to the third heaven where God lives? Now, religious people think that you go out and you're going to live with God on streets paved with gold. That's typically what I'm told. That's the picture I get from the cartoons and Life magazine. And it's what I've been told and what I've heard by other religious people that are describing these indescribable pleasures of heaven. You know, whatever their concepts happen to be. So there he is. He goes with the whirlwind into heaven. Now, if you'll jot that down, remember that was Genesis 5, verses 21 through 24. That was Enoch, but it doesn't say that he went to heaven. It says God took him. I don't know where he took him, but I do know this. He didn't take him out to the third heaven. He didn't take him out to the second heaven. He might have taken him up into the first heaven, but then, you know, is he flying around up there in the clouds to this day, or did he ever die, and did he ever get buried in a hole in the ground, or did he drown and did the fish eat him in the ocean, or whatever happened to Enoch's body? Then we go to 2 Kings 2, verses 9 through 11, and we find Elijah and Elisha, that story, the whirlwind. You know, this chariot takes Elijah in a whirlwind up to heaven. They assume that Elijah is up in heaven with Jesus and God and the angels to this day. And there's probably out on the golf links right now on about the 15th tee, and they're about to tee off. You know, here's God and Elijah and Enoch. I don't know who the foursome is, but in 2 Chronicles 21, verses 12 through 15, jot this one down because this is pretty important. 2 Chronicles 21, verses 12 through 15. starting in verse 12, it says, "And there came a writing to him from Elijah the prophet." Elijah. Remember Elijah, the guy that was taken up into heaven with the chariot of fire? 20 years later, in 2 Chronicles 21, verses 12 through 15, 20 years later, you have to do a little chronology work here, but this is the time frame. Elisha gets a letter from Elijah the prophet saying, "Thus saith the Lord God of David your father, because you have not walked in the ways of Jehoshaphat your father, nor in the ways of Asa king of Judah, but you have walked in the way of the kings of Israel, and have made Judah and the inhabitants of Jerusalem to go whoring like to the whoredoms of the house of Ahab, and also has slain your brethren of your father's house, which were better than yourself. Behold, with a great plague will the Eternal smite the people and your children and your wives and all of your goods. And you shall have great sickness by disease of your bowels until your bowels fall out by reason of the sickness day by day." Now that's a letter that Elijah wrote 20 years after the parting with Elisha. I don't know who he was writing that to now, but he was writing it to the son of Asa, the king of Judah, wasn't it? Well, obviously then, Elijah, the day he was taken up into heaven, the atmosphere where the Aronca champs fly, and the Taylor crafts, and the Stearmans, and so on, and the Piper Tri-Pacers, obviously he was set down someplace else later, after that event, and he was doing something. I don't know what he was doing. The text doesn't tell us, but we do know this from the text. He didn't go out to the third heaven. He didn't die when he went up to heaven. His body didn't die like my granny and my Uncle Buster. So he was alive on planet Earth during that 20 years and lived long enough to write a letter to this king and told him, hey, chump, you're going to bite the dust. And then you're going to die hard because your guts are going to rot out of you. Probably had cancer. Now in Psalm 37, verse 9, it says, "For evildoers shall be cut off, but those that wait upon the Eternal, they shall inherit the earth." Now there's a strange scripture, Psalm 37, verse 9. Now that runs exactly opposite to the beliefs of all the Christians that I know. Because all of the Christians that I know, or that I've had contact with, they believe that when they die, they go to heaven. Now here's Psalm 37, verse 9 says, "Evildoers shall be cut off, but those that wait upon the Eternal shall inherit the earth." Now it leaves you 13 million Mormons out of the game, because you're not going to inherit the earth. You're going to go back to heaven where you came from, remember? But why would God tell us that the righteous are going to inherit the earth and the evildoers are going to be cut off? If we're going to go to heaven, what the hell's the earth got to do with it? You know, the earth is nothing but a speck of sand out here on the beach. I mean, you got trillions of galaxies out here that are filled with trillions of stars and trillions of planets like planet Earth. I mean, you're talking about a big piece of real estate. And he says, you're going to inherit the earth. Well, does that mean we go out to heaven and then we spend the work day here on planet Earth? And then go back to heaven at night? I don't know. You figure it out. Psalm 37:11, "The meek shall inherit the earth, and shall delight themselves in the abundance of peace." So there's going to be an abundance of peace, evidently here on planet Earth, that the meek are going to inherit. So the last thing you want to do is be meek. You want to be arrogant and strident and ornery and nasty, so that you won't inherit the earth, so that you can go to heaven. Is that the way that works? I don't know. I didn't write this. I'm just a reporter. This is Psalm 37, verse 22. In verse 29 of that same Psalm 37, "The righteous shall inherit the land and dwell therein forever." The righteous shall inherit the land. Hey, that's right up my alley. You know, I'd like to inherit the land. I got a piece of ground here that belongs to the state of Missouri, and I have to pay property tax on it every year. That's how I know who owns this piece of land. And that's how I also know that I don't own this piece of land. I pay rent on it. called property tax. And if I don't pay that property tax to the owner, the state of Missouri, they'll take it away from me and give it to some other peon that will pay that tax, that will pay that rent. I would like to inherit this piece of ground. I would like to own this piece of ground. I would like to be established forever on this piece of real estate. I'd like to own this. I'd like to own this in fee simple with an allodial fee simple tenure and title on this piece of real estate. That's what Psalm 37, 9, 11, 22, and 29 tell us. The religious people tell us, oh no, that's not true, God made a mistake. You're going to go to heaven and live for eternity in heaven with Jesus and walk around on streets of paved with gold. Now, is that out in the second heaven or is that out in the third heaven? Boys and girls, I don't know. They don't tell you. In fact, I've never heard anybody explain the first, second, third heaven until I researched it out. Now, Herbert Armstrong used to talk about first, second, third heaven. I shouldn't say that nobody else did, because I did read a couple of treatises from Herbert Armstrong, and he thought about that first, second, third heaven. Just like the first, second, third resurrection that you see in Revelation chapter 20 talks about resurrection, but Christians don't talk about resurrections. They talk about dying and going straight to heaven. Mrs. Birchfield didn't talk anything about my grandmother being resurrected from the dead in a judgment at some future date, and that she was asleep in her grave and that she was going to be resurrected from the dead. I didn't hear that from Mrs. Birchfield, but then Mrs. Birchfield was a Christian. I've had people ask me that, you know, from time to time. They'll say, well, George Gordon, are you a Christian? And I tell them, no, I'm not. Well, and Olin leaves, well, then you have to be a Jew or you have to be an atheist. No, I'm not a Jew, and no, I'm not an atheist either. And that's as far as anybody's able to think. They can't think outside the box that there could be something beside atheists, Christians, and Jews, that there could be something else out there. That never enters anybody's mind. If it does, I haven't heard it. So I just wanted to share with you. Don't get mad at me now, because I'm just a messenger delivering information. Psalm 37, 34 says, wait on the Eternal and keep His way, and He shall exalt you to inherit the land. When the wicked are cut off, you shall see it. So, evidently the wicked are going to be shut off from the land, and then the assumption is that if they're going to be shut off from the land, then they're going to be sent to hell. Now, so far we haven't seen anybody being sent off to down the Allegheny's hell and being burned for all of eternity in hell fire. The common conception is that you go to heaven and live forever, or you go to hell and live forever, but there is never any death. Granny didn't die, she just had a transition from life on planet Earth to life in heaven, that she is an immortal soul and that she lives forever. Well, stand by, and next time we'll take a look at this thing of immortal souls. Do you have one of those? Have you got an immortal soul? Do you have eternal life already? Next time. All right, you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review. We're going to have to shut it off right here. See you back here tomorrow night, same time, same station. For more information about the law school and The Law Hour, please go to our website. It's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Remember, the law school offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. To order yours, please go to the law school website, georgegordon.org, or call us direct, 417-273-4967. Remember, the Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. All right, time's up. We've got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night. Same time, same station, God willing, of course. So until then, good night, friends.